Well, today we continue our study of the book of Proverbs, and each time we get together, like to start off with an American proverb. You've probably heard this one before. It says, "Don't bite the hand that feeds you." So think about that picture. Think about how, in a short sentence, this idiom here, it communicates so much. And so, what's that trying to communicate? Don't bite the hand that feeds you. Well, if someone is providing you with necessities, you probably shouldn't disrespect them or be ungrateful or criticize their behavior, because he or she could turn around and take away what you need. Thus, that idea of almost like a dog that would be getting fed something and then go and fight its master. So don't bite the hand that feeds you. So we, once again, through a short phrase, we get an understanding of what we should do. And so as we come to Proverbs chapter 2, we're going to see, as time goes by, the whole idea of, as these next few chapters unfold, the path or the way. And this is nothing new, using that metaphor to get across something. What path are you on? What way are you going? Even Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." So he presents himself as a road, as a path, as a way. Ancient literature has this in the Odyssey, where Odysseus is making his way home, and we see all the different things that he goes through that communicate different aspects of life. And then for the Christian, we see in Bunyan's classic, Pilgrim's Progress, we see a pilgrim making his way to the celestial city and all the different things that transpire. So Jesus, God, the Word, through the pen of Solomon, is allowing us to have an understanding of what is true, what is false, and what path should I go down, what path should I avoid. And point number one is that it will sanctify you. Look at verse 1 with me of chapter 2 of the book of Proverbs. "My son," once again, it's that familial way of communicating, "my son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you." So Solomon had embraced God's law. He made it his own by faith and obedience, and as well as the whole idea of teaching it. The wisdom of these words is available to those who, first of all, understand that there's a rich value in this. There's a treasure that wisdom possesses. And appropriately, wisdom begins when a person values it above all else. You'll see that in education, the people that are in class that are ready to learn. And sometimes, I remember this in college, it was the married students that would be raising their hands, asking questions. Some of us younger ones, we just wanted to get out of class. We'll do the work. We'll do the best job we can, but we'd like to get out of class and go play softball outside. It's getting warm outside, or just, you know, spend some time in the dorm together, joking and playing games and stuff. Whereas these married students who had experienced some things in life, they were starting to get serious about things. So they would ask these questions that showed that they were very, very serious. And so that they treasured it, they valued it, and so they were more ready to learn. Verse 2 says, "Making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding." So once wisdom is properly valued, we saw with it being a treasure in that first verse, both the ear and then the mind, the heart, are they're captivated by it. Verse 3, "Yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding." So this idea of calling out for insight, this shows this passionate pleading of a person who's desperate to know and desperate to apply the truth of God. If you have any sort of indifference, it would leave you wanting the fullness of wisdom. Verse 4, if you seek it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasures. So this is a search, a desiring search. And that's the most intensive of a lifetime. I know of a gentleman who's constantly looking for different coins, and he has an eye for it, and he sees it in ways that others that have no interest in it would notice. And then he says this. He says, verse 5, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. So it goes back to that first chapter, I believe the 7th verse, where it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And so when a person has that understanding after they've treasured these things, then they will fear the Lord and they'll find the knowledge of God. Verse 6, for the Lord gives wisdom. Yahweh gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. So the words of his mouth are contained in Scripture. It is there where God speaks, and true wisdom comes only by revelation. Secondly, it will secure you. Look at verses 7 and 8. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity. Guarding the paths, remember he talked about paths or ways, guarding the paths of justice and watching over the way of his saints. So this identifies those who are true believers, who are seeking their desire, and they seek to know, they want to love, they want to obey God, and to live righteously. And their covenant keepers, just like their Lord is a covenant keeper, these covenant keepers alone can know wisdom and experience God's protection. And then verse 9, then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity, every good path. So we had looked at that in the first chapter, that idea of righteousness and justice and equity. And so that's that ethical triad that will continue to show up. We see it in Micah. Do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. Point number 3, it will satisfy you. Look at verse 10. For wisdom will come into your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will watch over you. Understanding will guard you. So this heart, this commonly refers to the mind as the center of thinking and reason. So that's what's happening here. There's a wisdom that comes into the heart. It becomes a part of you. It's almost like taking a drink of something and it gets into your system. And then that in verse 11, you see that truth is the protector from all evil. So what's going to help me to be protected from evil is having that discretion that will watch over me and that understanding that will guard me. And then point number 4, it will save you. Look at verse 12 with me. Delivering you from the way of evil, from men of perverted speech or twisted speech. It's typical of those who reject wisdom, and that's what that happens. You'll see that on the news. You'll see that in politics. You'll see that in preachers that are false teachers. They will twist speech. They will make things. They'll say things. They'll say pro-choice instead of pro-abortion. They'll talk about the Equality Act and not really explain what that is. They'll use phrases that resonate with people and make people think they mean one thing when it's something else. Well, look at verse 13. Who forsake, once again, the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness. And we see that that parallelism that is synonymous, where it's using two words that are communicating paths of uprightness and then walking in this actually a opposite parallelism. So the ways of darkness is an opposite that is communicated there. And then verse 14, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perverseness of evil. So fools love most what is worse and will ultimately result in their greatest hurt. So that's what's going to happen. They're going to head that direction. And then verse 15, men whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. So that's what happens when you go down this path, when you delight in these things, then it's going to be something that's crooked and devious. Verse 16, so you will be delivered from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress with her smooth words. That forbidden woman is a harlot, repeatedly condemned in Scripture, especially in the Proverbs. Literally, she is foreign or strange because such women were at first from outside Israel, but came to include any prostitute or adulteress. And her words are the flattering or smooth words of what we see later in Proverbs 17. And we look at verses 14 to 20, where he even goes farther and deeper in these words. So take a listen to Proverbs 17, verses 14 through 20. The beginning of strife is like letting out water so quick before the quarrel breaks down. He who justifies the wicked and he who condemns the righteous are both like the abomination of the Lord. Why should a fool have money in his hand to buy wisdom when he has no sense? A friend loves at all times, but he keeps moving down here and he says, one who lacks sense gives a pledge and puts up security in the presence of his neighbor. And the steps here are extremely dangerous. And the Proverbs is throughout. I could turn page after page here and communicate these lies that this person says. We see in Proverbs chapter 7 the different things that are being said to communicate the lies of this woman. Verse 14, I have to offer sacrifices, she says, and today I've paid vows, so now I have come out to meet you, to seek you eagerly and have found you. I have spread my couch with coverings, colored linens from Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, alloys, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love till the morning. Let us delight ourselves with love. For my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He took a bag of money with him. At full moon, he will come home. And so these are those words that communicate, come on and do these things with me. And it's going to be a horrible path to go down. And then verse 17, back in Proverbs chapter 2, who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. So she leaves the guidance and the friendship of her husband. She, in a wider sense, this forgetting the covenant, this could be the covenant of Sinai. But here it refers to that marriage covenant back in Genesis 2:24. And there's a commitment that would be to faithfulness, to fidelity. And this is one that's stepping it away. And as I think over years of ministry, how many men regret falling for the lies of the adulteress and vice versa? Women that regret falling for the lies of that adulterer. Verse 18 of Proverbs 2 says, for her house sinks down to death and her paths to the departed. So this destructive nature, this sin that is blinding, it leads a person to walk alongside death. And death in Proverbs is presented as both a gradual descent and a sudden end. Verse 19, none who go to her come back, nor do they regain the paths of life. This is that irreversible nature of continuing in this sin. And what it does is there's devastating consequences that it points to. It leads to physical death, as expressed in the Hebrew euphemisms of verse 22. Cut off and uprooted. After that comes the reality of eternal death. And we'll get there in a moment as we keep working through this. Verse 20 of Proverbs 2. So you will walk in the way, see that, of the good, and keep to the path of the righteous. That's the path that should be taken. For the upright, verse 21, for the upright will inhabit the land, and those with integrity will remain in it. So that's the exact opposite to those who live in the sexual sin there. They're the ones that are headed for death. Those who belong to the Lord, they're going to live. And then we see that verse 22, but the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the treacherous will be rooted out of it. And so you and I will watch culture, we'll watch people, and it just seems like they're getting away with stuff, and they aren't. And then ultimately that path is a path of destruction. And so I want to go back to that American proverb, don't bite the hand that feeds you. The hand that feeds us is the Lord's. And he can be trusted. And we can look to him and live. And so as you and I continue through this study of the book of Proverbs, we're going to see that God is trying to keep us from a path that would lead to destruction and bring us to a path that leads to everlasting life.